is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel. Gaslighting. I'd like to revisit and expand here on a point I made 2 weeks ago at the end of Pathology and Pathogen. The very last part of Andrew Joyce's article I quoted was, "Critics of Jews are equally concerned with developing an understanding not only of Jewish power and influence, but also of the pathology of whites that has facilitated Jewish power and influence, as well as the current disaster of displacement-level immigration and multiculturalism. The emphasis is on the identification of multiple sources and origins of the current societal malaise, and on evidence-based intellectual and scientific investigation of all aspects of the interactions between Jews and non-Jews in all locations and throughout historical time. This activity can in no way be seen as the seeking of simplistic answers." Now this, I said in my conclusion, is the problem. It is an acknowledgement that there is a problem, and at the same time, it's a misconstrual of the nature and source of the problem. As Joyce's own description alludes, in the interactions between Jews and non-Jews in all locations and throughout historical time, the sole common element is the Jews. Yet he also takes pains to avoid this simple point, to emphasize that he and other critics of Jews seek multiple sources and origins, which can in no way be seen as the seeking of simplistic answers. But the answer is simple. No pathogen, no pathology. Or to put it in slightly less simple terms, the impact of Jewish pathologization and manipulation of whites is so enormous that it's difficult to imagine what problems would remain if those were removed. At any rate, as the earlier portion of Joyce's article made clear, and as I can attest to myself, an objective critic of Jews can dig into as many details and develop as complex an understanding of Jews as they like. But from the beginning, Jews will pathologize them and their effort as anti-Semitism, as a congenital mental disease which has nothing to do with the Jews. My argument is that the simple answer to such single-minded hostility is, first of all, to recognize it as such. And second, to recognize that whatever appeal objectivity has to whites, however inborn it may be, it is in this case part of the problem. In the face of Jewish aggression, whites have historically capitulated and are now prostrate, exactly because we have internalized the fundamental thrust of the Jewish critique. Whites have blamed ourselves and our societies for not being tolerant or accommodating enough. The political term for this misguided belief is liberalism. The simple answer is to steel ourselves and advise our collective to be less prone to tolerance and accommodation, to resist the urge to blame ourselves and our collective, and instead to recognize manipulative alien collectives, first and foremost the Jews, as an endless source of threats and pathology from which we individuals who are aware of the situation have a responsibility to defend ourselves and our collective. I must emphasize now again that I credit Joyce with at least connecting his own discussion of white pathology to the Jews and Jewish power. Though the connection is obvious and simple to make, it is missing from the diagnosis provided by many other pundits who like to use terms like white pathology. This is especially glaring for those pundits who insist on using terms like white suicide to push the suicide meme, as I discussed in Fear and Genocide last week. Pundits like the Jew Lawrence Oster and the jihadi Fjordman come immediately to mind. But I'm also thinking of pundits like Ricardo Duchesne and Jared Taylor, who more or less pretend that the Jews don't exist or are quote-unquote white, lowercase white. And in either case, the Jews don't play a significant role in anything they have to say about white pathology or suicide. Duchesne and Taylor were among the handful of writers that Kevin MacDonald asked to address the issue in late 2013 in an article he titled recently in the Occidental Quarterly, White Special Sections on White Pathology. Now, MacDonald has written about it himself. In an article from October of 2014, titled Psychopathology and Racial Self-Hate Among Whites, he started the article by writing, "A prominent feature of the Frankfurt School was the ideology that ethnocentrism among whites, but not Jews, was a psychopathology. This weapon was taken up by the organized Jewish community, which claimed that pro-white and anti-Jewish attitudes were literally public health problems and popularized phrases like, quote, virulent anti-Semitism, unquote, analogizing anti-Jewish attitudes to the spread of a virus. This campaign has been incredibly successful amongst whites. Whites who have internalized this pathogen naturally suppress such attitudes, and they do so despite their universality and despite the reality that ethnic self-interest is eminently rational from an evolutionary perspective, and even despite the fact that many of those promoting this pathogen are proudly ethnocentric themselves. But the campaign has been very effective. No one wants to publicly express attitudes that mark one as a psychiatric case." So far, so good in MacDonald's description of it. He even identified the Jews as the pathogen, or at least as the source of a pathogenic campaign. But then he seems to balk and backpedal, showing some signs that he too has internalized a bit of the pathogen he's just described. He writes, "Given the rationality and the evolutionary imperative of ethnic interests, there is the opposite suggestion, that at least some of the whites who express such attitudes, anti-white attitudes, are suffering from a psychopathology. After all, the great majority of humanity is, to varying degrees, ethnocentric and proud of it. What's wrong with whites?" Well, this isn't the opposite suggestion. It's the same suggestion. There's something inherently and unfixably wrong with whites, and it is not caused by the Jews. That's the suggestion. The main example that MacDonald focuses on, as he continues in his article, is Pastor Renita Marie, who, in response to the Jews media propaganda about Ferguson, wrote an article for the Jews media expressing guilt about her whiteness. MacDonald describes her as a, quote, genuine liberal, unquote, a term he says was used by the Frankfurt School. He then explains how the Frankfurt School's pseudoscience was wrong, that they, quote, create an upside-down world where ethnocentric whites had parents who didn't love them, unquote. But the woman he talks about had an ethnocentric upbringing and still turned out to be a race traitor. Therefore, MacDonald seemed to be presenting this as a case of, quote, white pathology, unquote, minus the Jews. As he puts it, Rev Marie has dropped out of the white race and has become a crusader against it. Of course, that means a good career and lots of praise from elites in the contemporary environment. But it's pretty clear that her motivation is far deeper than merely taking advantage of all the opportunities available these days from hating whites. a genuine race trader. Noel Ignatiev would be proud. But it isn't at all clear that Marie's motivation runs deeper than the Jewish pathogenic factors that MacDonald himself describes. Instead, it seems, as I previously discussed in the case of Joyce, that MacDonald simply doesn't wish to accept that it is that simple. Another indication that MacDonald is that MacDonald links Noel Ignatiev's name in that paragraph to a search of his website. And the first hit is an article from 2009 that he titled "Promoting Genocide of Whites, Noel Ignatiev and the Culture of Western Suicide." MacDonald notes that the effort by a professor, Noel Ignatiev, and his journal, Race Trader, to promote the, quote, cultural and psychological genocide of whites, unquote. Amazingly, MacDonald refuses to take this seriously. The word genocide used by Ignatiev. And he argues instead that Ignatiev's anti-white arguments and activism are just so much hyperbole and nonsense. MacDonald describes how he sees Ignatiev and his allies. He writes, "Their hatred assumes a surface legitimacy because the hated, quote, whites, unquote, are just a, quote, social construct, unquote. It's not really about killing people, so where's the beef? The, quote, genocide, unquote, of whites is not about homicide or suicide. It's only about getting white people to stop thinking that they are white. Our interpretation is that Ignatiev's views are nothing more than ethnic competition. As a leftist Jew, he is part of a long tradition that has opposed white interests and identity, the culture of critique that has become the culture of Western suicide." But as MacDonald knows well enough, even in 2009, I would say, the culture of critique is a Jewish construct, not a white construct. Jews deliberately attempting to induce whites to stop thinking of themselves as white is genocide, not suicide. This should be obvious to someone who is actually explaining the role played by the Jews. So I have to say, never mind what's wrong with whites, never mind what's wrong with Duchesne and Taylor, what's wrong with Joyce and MacDonald? Physicians, heal thyselves. When I first discussed white pathology, I acknowledged that many whites are clearly behaving pathologically. My point was that the pathogen, the Jews, explains this. Furthermore, Jewish psychological influence is visible even in whites who are conscious of race and the Jews, even in those who attempt to explain Jewish psychological influence, like Joyce, and as I've just described, MacDonald. The most negative response I got to my initial attempt was, "We already know what is wrong with the Jews. We should now ask ourselves what is wrong with us." And this is precisely the suggestion that Joyce and MacDonald have made. And that's what I've taken issue with. I consider it a problem that even white men as knowledgeable about the Jews and Jewish power as MacDonald and Joyce are, can, for fear of appearing simple-minded, come across instead as overeager to buy into the less plausible idea of a congenital white pathology, independent of the Jews. An idea which is primarily promoted by Jews themselves and others who seem most interested to ignore or at least downplay the role of Jews. So far, I've been reiterating and fleshing out points and arguments I've already made. I'd like to add a new twist now, another way of seeing the relationship between whites and Jews that I think dovetails with this discussion. It also fits my previous suggestion that whites need to confront the parasitic nature of that relationship and not shy from taking the white side of it. I first discussed Stockholm Syndrome, In the Nature of Jewish Power, Part 3. I was trying to understand and explain the behavior of men like John Derbyshire, who is well aware of Jewish power and the fear that the Jews induce, but who in spite of that, or rather because of it, minimizes the role of the Jews and denounces the braver and more honest men than himself who don't, like Kevin MacDonald. Stockholm syndrome, or capture bonding, is a psychological phenomena in which hostages express empathy and sympathy and have positive feelings toward their captors, sometimes to the point of defending them. At the time, I quoted a portion of an article describing the symptoms of Stockholm syndrome, which I'll quote again here because it can be seen as a metaphor for the broader mainstream media and political zeitgeist that extends well beyond Derbyshire and MacDonald. Included in these traits are the prisoner's belief, correct or incorrect, it doesn't matter, that he or she cannot escape, which means that survival must occur within the rules set by the all-powerful captor. And the prisoner's isolation from people not being held by the captors, which prohibits any outside view of the captors from infringing on the psychological processes that lead to Stockholm syndrome. So in the current zeitgeist, the white prisoners or hosts dare not question their Jew captors, the parasites, who quite literally dictate and diligently enforce the rules of proper discourse. This is popularly referred to as political correctness, though the term Semitic correctness is more fitting. The whole crux of capture bonding is that the prisoners don't see their captors as wrongdoers, but out of ignorance or pity, come over time to sympathize and make excuses for them instead. There is a related psychological phenomena whose symptoms are just as much or more relevant to the relationship between whites and Jews, and specifically the discussion of anti-Semitism and white pathology. It's called gaslighting. Gaslighting is a form of mental abuse in which information is twisted or spun, selectively omitted to favor the abuser, or false information is presented with the intent of making victims doubt their own memory, perception, and sanity. Instances may range simply from the denial by an abuser that previous abusive incidents ever occurred, up to the staging of bizarre events by the abuser with the intention of disorienting the victim. The term owes its origin to the play Gaslight and its film adaptations, after which it was coined popularly. Sociopaths frequently use gaslighting tactics. Sociopaths consistently transgress social mores, break laws, and exploit others, but typically are also charming and convincing liars who consistently deny wrongdoing. Thus, some who have been victimized by sociopaths may doubt their perceptions. The obvious analogy is that the Jews and their psychoanalytic theories of anti-Semitism are the mental abusers and the mental abuse, the psychopathic liars who deny any wrongdoing. And whites are the victims of this mental abuse and exhibit white pathology as a result of it. Another definition of the term explains in more detail. Gaslighting, the practice of brainwashing, or you could say brain polluting and be more correct about it, or convincing a mentally healthy individual that they are going insane, or that their understanding of reality is mistaken or false. The term gaslighting is based on the 1944 MGM movie Gaslight, casting you as the crazy one. In the classic suspense thriller Gaslight, Paula, Ingrid Bergman, marries the villainous Gregory Anton, Charles Boyer, not realizing that he is the one who murdered her aunt and is now searching for her missing jewels. To cover up his treachery, he tries to persuade Paula that she is going mad so he can search the attic for the jewels without her interference. He plants missing objects on her person in order to make her believe that she has no recollection of reality. Skipping a little ahead in this description, essentially it describes forms of manipulation which are designed to make the victim lose their grip on the truth or doubt their perception of reality. Among the examples of what it looks like, especially one that fits the Jews, is this. A person acts threateningly and then accuses you of abuse when you react in self-defense. How it feels. Gaslighting can be a terrifying experience. It can quickly put you on the defensive, trying to justify your own actions or behaviors when you started out by challenging someone else's questionable behavior. A gaslighting perpetrator's fabrications may be presented so convincingly and with such conviction, you begin to question yourself and your own memories and judgment. Among a list of the points advising what not to do in response to gaslighting is this. Don't waste your time trying to convince someone who has already made up their mind about you that they should reconsider. In other words, don't bother arguing with Jews or other true believer anti-whites. You won't have any success. Another point, don't blame yourself for what the other person is feeling or how they are behaving. Don't look for ways to change yourself or try to fix the another person. As the OOTF 3Cs mantra says, you didn't cause it, you can't cure it, and you can't control it. You are only responsible for your own words and actions. I would translate that as don't go searching for white pathology when the effort Jews make to create it is staring you right in the face. If you do, then you are responsible for that. I'll emphasize again right here that I'm drawing an analogy. It's not a perfect fit. For one thing, gaslighting ordinarily describes a relationship between two individuals, whereas the analog I'm making is for the relationship between whites and Jews collectively, even though within those collectives there are a broad spectrum of individual motives and attitudes. I do think, however, that the analogy is useful because it fits the most relevant and important aspect of the relationship between whites and Jews, the relatively conscious and lopsided relationship between white and Jew elites. Another description of gaslighting from a blog called Narcissists Suck. Gaslighting occurs when, and this is emphasized, a person you trust to tell you the truth about reality, and end of emphasis, is in fact bending reality with lies. When this happens consistently over a period of time, it causes you to question your sanity. This is an important point. For whatever reason, one participant in the gaslighting relationship trusts the other. They do not expect and cannot accept that the other could lie to them. The other participant, in contrast, is deliberately manipulating and exploiting that trust. Driving the victim insane may not even be their main intent, as it's described elsewhere, but can instead be seen as a long-term result of the primary ingredient, the unrequited love, the one-sided abuse, and deceit. That same source goes on. If you find yourself often questioning your own sanity, you need to suspect you are being gaslighted. In the absence of any who will support what you are seeing, hearing, and knowing, please give yourself permission to believe yourself. Gaslighting is a deliberate and evil tactic. So when you've determined that someone is doing this to you, it is past time to remove yourself from this person's sphere of influence. I found a description connecting narcissism, gaslighting, and Stockholm syndrome. Once again, there's some obvious parallels here to the relationship between elite whites and Jews. In particular, the description of narcissists fits the Jews. Narcissistic victim syndrome, or NVS, is the result of the damages that occur to a person who is closely connected or involved with or works with a narcissist. A narcissist is someone who needs total control and believes the world revolves around them and them only. The narcissist craves constant praise, admiration, honor, and respect, even when they do not deserve it. They will use any means within which to obtain this constant control, including the following: intimidation, abuse, physical, sexual, emotional, and more, isolation, deprivation, financial slash economic control, and anything else that they can use to keep the victim under their thumb and control. One of their best tools is gaslighting, or the denigrating of the victim, so they believe they are crazy and that only the narcissist is capable of taking care of them or being with them. The narcissist is also always right and the perfect person, thus they could never possibly be wrong. This lends well to the theory, or lends well with the theory, of gaslighting, as the narcissist will have the victim believe that they are too weak or crazy or delusional and more. They will actually cause the victim to distrust their own selves and ability to think for themselves. Narcissists are about total and complete submission of control to them. They do not recognize any boundaries or borders between them and others. They are border control. Skipping ahead a little, some of the signs and symptoms of NVS include: a victim of NVS can exhibit Stockholm syndrome or cult-like behavior, joining up with the aggressor. Again, think of John Derbyshire. They will defend and protect the narcissist for fear of not being loved or part of their inner circle. The victim's self-esteem is so torn down by the gaslighting and other crazy-making behaviors of the narcissist that it is just easier for them to follow along. They often are so emotionally beaten down, they do not realize what is even happening to them, just that they are angry or sad all of the time and feel like they have no persona or sense of self. They can show signs of cognitive dissonance, which basically means that they know the situation they are in is no good, but they continue to stay with it using false rationale. Yet they are angry, scared, confused, lost, and do not know where to turn to. They fear things that never happened or even exist, but because the narcissist says they did, the victim is programmed to believe it is so. Like rampant antisemitism, the Holocaust. That's what comes to my mind, the analogy right there. Their ability to think clearly has been disrupted and taken over by the narcissist. There's much more I could say about this analogy, but as with what I had to say about parasitism, the main point is not only that it's more explanative than some vague white pathology, but it's prescriptive as well. In an article titled "When You Love Your Abuser, Stockholm Syndrome and Trauma Bonds," for example, we find some advice. The only way to escape this dangerous dependency upon a psychopath is to remove yourself permanently from his influence. Any contact with him keeps you trapped in his web of manipulation and deceit. In some respects, however, this is a circular proposition. If you have the strength to leave a psychopath and the lucidity to reconsider your relationship with him, then you are probably not suffering from Stockholm syndrome. As we recall, psychopaths establish control of their victims bite by bite, like emotional vampires. Once again, BITE stands for behavior, information, thoughts, and emotions. Psychopaths attempt to control all aspects of their partner's experience of reality. To counteract their dangerous influence, you need to bite back. Give the victim a true perception of reality and real emotional support. White's need to produce our own media, which offers a true perception of reality and real emotional support. Explain what the Jews are doing and how they're doing it. Counter the lie that they're just an odd kind of white people who are or could ever be on the same side. Point out that the Jews are gaslighting whites, that their anti-white narrative about racism, antisemitism, blood libel, the Holocaust, and more is manipulative, abusive. Whites shouldn't put up with this because it obviously isn't good for whites.